Hello, welcome to Star Wars Spelled Out. I'm your host, Josh Chapman. And today, I'm trying to not go as fast as I normally do because Matt is trying to mimic me and I'm trying to throw him off, but it's not quite working. And today, we're wrapping up the season one, allegedly, of Ahsoka. I mean, say allegedly as in there may be a season two. I'm not going to say the whole series because I think there'll be a season two. But we've got the full deck here. Everybody's favourites all to come and join in. So I'm going to go around the room just as I see the windows. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Josh. Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be more.
Well, let's hope so for the sake of this this podcast that there is. And next to her, from his microphone is slightly in a different spot here, but he's got a beautiful setup here. Andy Bell, how's it going, buddy?
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain.
I like to think you've been practicing all week for that. Do you remember there was like some UK show where like some person would get like singing lessons through the show for a performance at the end of it? It was someone like, oh, you know, I wanted to sing I was going to learn to sing a song at a funeral or a birthday or something, and they would get some British person who didn't know how to sing a song.
All I was thinking of is Jim Will Fix It, but I don't think that's the right program to bring up. No, I don't know, mate.
Transporters will know.
Stars in your eyes?
Tonight I'm being Rod Stewart or anything. It was literally just like, there was like a bloke who's like, well, I want to sing You'll Never Walk Alone at my 60th birthday or something like that. And he'd get lessons and then he'd sing it at the end. And someone will tell me. But somebody's impatiently looking at his watch waiting for his introduction is Grand Admiral Moll. Hello, Matthew. Hey, you got your Admiral's jacket on this week?
Everybody's favourite and Matt Mole tonight.
No blue makeup though. This is your last chance to do blue makeup.
I know. I just don't have the time. My son literally drops to sleep at 8:31. I've got about 3 minutes to crawl down, go to the toilet, get a bottle of water, and join you fine people.
He's on a pretty good routine.
Talk some Star Wars. He's on my routine. Like I don't let any mucking around on Wednesday nights. Yeah. I still have to put him to bed, but.
That's all right. That's what you've got to do. It's all about boundaries. Boundaries and routine. That's all you need to learn with young children. But I'm glad you could make it. So here we are. We're at the end of season one of Ahsoka. We've done it. That's it. So it's likely that'll be it for Star Wars TV this year. You're not going to sneak that skeleton crew in at the end?
I believe it's coming January.
Did Boba Fett come in January, Catherine? Do you remember? Or was that late December?
Late December. It was on my birthday.
Oh, that's right. December. We did Steel Wars, didn't we?
Yeah.
We were plucked from the crowd to do Steel Wars. We were started at the bottom. Now we're here. We were plebs in the crowd back in the day, and then we were on the stage at that shady bar in Melbourne. Was it the Exford or whatever it is? The shonkiest bar in Melbourne.
Yeah, and then you go upstairs, and it's like, oh, this is quite nice.
Yeah.
Like the contrast between the two levels is just astonishing. But yeah, that was the 29th of December. What year? I don't know. Or blends.
2022.
21. Oh. They do all blend. There you go. They literally all blend.
Was it only last year?
No.
No, the year before.
Yeah.
No, because Mando was last year.
Yeah.
But, look, January, that's still not too bad, considering strikes and all that kind of stuff. Although it's looking like this 11 a.m. Australia time drop isn't going anywhere because Loki's dropping at that time now, so they seem pretty happy with that time.
Yeah, I'm not.
Well, you are in the minority, Catherine.
Well, the letters.
No, listen to me.
When Josh could be going for a walk at 11 o'clock, he's actually watching Loki. So
yeah, exactly. That's probably why you know my doctor's telling me to lose weight because I'm like it's not my fault. It's Ahsoka's been dropping at 11 right when I'd be going for a walk, and you know what can I do? Luckily, it only goes for 8 episodes. So yep, it's wrapped up. It's the dust has settled, I suppose. What's the general feeling? Maybe not even personally from you guys. We'll get to you personally, but what's the general feeling out there in the world? Can anybody sort of gauge how sort of, it seems to be pretty varied. It seems to be some people just going, this is exactly what my bag, and others going, yeah, mid.
It's been pretty indifferent. And like, for, I think, the hardcore Rebels fans, they absolutely adored and loved it, and Filoni's a god, and bring on the Filoni-verse. Whereas, you know, viewership dropped off. Like, I think 1.2 million people came in for the premiere, and only 864,000 in the US or something came in for the finale. So it definitely dropped off in terms of.
It's not a huge drop off, though, is it? That's
not huge. And, you know, that's only, like, of course, the Americans only report on what's happening in America. Like, don't worry about the rest of the world.
Yep.
But, you know, you know, people like me and Jimmy Dice, and even Christopher Hall now, he's a Thrawn man. He's a Thrawn man.
I think that's a sound clip every time he keeps saying a Thrawn man. I think it's like that Kev one. But, yeah, look,
we fucked him.
Yeah. you know, I think all you guys probably are the same, that in your group of friends of people, you know, you're the Star Wars person. That's where the Star Wars questions get directed. And I had a few people who sort of dipped in and went, I don't know who these people are. Why should I care who they are? I guess she was from that Mando episode. What's going on? What's the dealio? But I mean, Mandalorian was a bunch of strangers at the start as well. But I mean, it had the Grogu power. Was it too inside why baseball? Andy, what do you reckon?
Why are the whales flying?
I'm somewhat surprised about the reaction, especially from the people in the know. I kind of see Ahsoka as being relatively safe. Is that the right word? A safe,
yeah. Yep.
No risk type of series, which is okay. It's good. I mean, there are some parts of it which are epic, and some really, really great stories that will come from it as well. But I'm surprised just how divisory it seemed to have been, not just with the fans that adore it because it's a continuation of Rebels, but folk that perhaps would typically accept a good, in inverted commas, Star Wars story.
Yep.
It's been quite interesting to watch some of that going on. From my experience, folk that I talk to about Star Wars that aren't necessarily as deep into it as I am, they said, yeah, it's good. It's good. It's a really exciting story. It's not particularly hard on the brain to work out what's going on. So we'll talk about personal opinions later, but from my immediate circle of friends, it seems to have landed quite well. But obviously, like I said, with the more specialized people that we know,
yep.
I'm surprised just how divisory it has been.
Yeah, I mean, it does represent a certain part of Star Wars. Obviously, it, like, going off the... I mean, the Mandalorian lent still, even though it didn't have immediate sort of original trilogy characters, does have that vibe and does lean into it a fair bit. This does owe itself to cartoon stuff as well, which is a little bit more niche and does have, a, like you said, certain fans and stuff. And it didn't really rely on, oh, look, there's that person. I mean, C-3PO, I guess, was kind of, I mean, we had Mon Mothma, I suppose, off the back of that, but I don't think any more than Andor did or anything like that.
I think for me, what the emotional beats, the really big emotional payoffs came if you knew the cartoon series like Clone Wars and or Rebels, you got the big emotional beats. If you didn't really get the oh, this is the Clone Wars, like really feel Wait, those feelings because Wars. Of, you know, having seen it.
Yep.
You know, you're missing out on that whole emotional beat. So I've been thinking about it, and I don't know if I've been thinking about how to say it, but that all the emotions came from having known things in the past, from past things, not from what was actually happening yeah. within the show itself.
Yeah. So the emotional things that you're getting emotional about is because you've got a connection to the things that they're showing you that have happened, or you're remembering something, as opposed to I'm getting emotional because of what the character is doing at that point, or how they're reacting or what they're doing like that. Yeah, it's a very good point, actually. Yeah. I think Skeleton Crew is an interesting one. I know we're not, this isn't the Skeleton Crew podcast yet. You know, we'll get to it when we get to it. But I mean, I think that's going to be even less connected. I mean, apart from the pirate, Matt, it's going to be a whole new raft. We assume it's going to be a whole new raft of thing, and it's going to have kids in it too. So you've got to try and sell the kids.
Vane and the pirates, yes, they'll be fine. We can accept new characters and new storylines. And Jude Law gives a certain gravitas, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it does have that star power as well. I think that some people are like, ooh, it's a Jude Law joint.
The Brits will follow. That's for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we'll get into it. Overall personal thoughts and stuff like that. I wasn't thinking about breaking the story down, you know, beat by beat. But essentially, it's like you said, a Rebels continuation. It sort of picks up with those characters. At its core, it seems to be a story of masters and apprentices and sort of their in the relationships and things with that. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it was done reasonably successfully, but I'm not 100% sold on
it. Don't forget as well, when we talk about the introduction of new characters to people that may not be in the know, Mandalorian had a massive leg up in that it was the first of its kind. It broke the mold when it came down to the idea of live action Star Wars in TV. And so there's a certain amount of groundbreaking vibe that goes with any sentimentality towards that that program.
But the thing is also is that I mean, Mandalorian obviously had, you know, the ace in the hole, which was Baby Yoda, Grogu, but also the core of that show, and when it's at its very best, is when it's those two. They're the core of the show, so the relationship of that. So you only got two characters you really need to rely on, and the way that they play off, and all the other people are basically sort of players around that. And I've said many times that the show sort of lost its way when they kind of got shoved to the side, and that core relationship sort of drifted, and it wasn't sort of the center to the show. You know, this show is called Ahsoka, but she doesn't really carry it any more than Sabine does, and you know, even Ezra at the back and Balin and all these things. So you got a lot more sort of players playing this thing up. Like, should it have been called Ahsoka, Matt? Should it have been called something else, or is this an easier sell just to call it Ahsoka?
No, that's the thing. Like, they said she took a back seat to a lot of the other characters, but it doesn't have to circle around one person. I mean,
Andor didn't. Like, I'll fully take that. Cassian wasn't the central character in a lot of the episodes.
That's 12 minutes, guys. Just marking that for home for the first Andor bring in. I think I brought up Andor before too, actually. So
Bix Killeen is the star of Andor.
Yeah. Look, maybe we're just poking holes and things, but yeah.
I think, like, to compare it to Mandalorian season one, it stood on its own. Yes, it was set in the Star Wars universe, but let's face it, you knew the Star Wars universe, but there was nothing being pulled from your cartoons or anything like that. Yeah. It was within itself that all the emotional payoffs and everything was from the characters that were new that series. And yes, there were a couple of little things, like, let's face it, the very end when Moff Gideon had the black saber.
Yep.
The Darksaber, whatever. Yes, that was a, you know, Leo gif pointing moment, but otherwise it was not that deep cut Rebels Clone Wars thing. Whereas it is now, there's just so many of the cameo, and character from the cartoons in it that, yeah, you're right. The actual relationship, Mando and child, is being lost.
Yeah. Well, is it doing
the characters served a purpose for the story?
Yeah.
Not the other way around. Which, unfortunately, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later, I felt that, unlike, and I'm sure this is blasphemy, I didn't particularly like Kenobi, for example, because I felt that the story served a purpose for the Kenobi character, as opposed to what you've just said, Catherine, which is the first season of Mandalorian was very much the characters were there to serve the purpose of the story.
So is this one, like, Matt, do you reckon that they're just doing, this is the heavy lifting, get all those, bring all these characters to the forefront to run with the story?
Definitely. I think this is, I'm going to call it a course correction, but it was just a huge, soft, massive reboot, sort of like, all right, we need to set the new stage. We need to get all these characters into live action and then basically set up the next 5 years, basically, because we've greenlit a movie, we've got the shows, we've sort of, I'm sure they've got the map, the Marvel map, so to speak, to interconnect. They've got it in theory. I'm sure the writer strike definitely has thrown a curveball in there. But, yeah, they've definitely set up the ground. Like I said, like it doesn't have to be... It's, you know, with Ahsoka and Sabine not even in the same galaxy as the Mandoverse, it really does give them a buffering ground for Mando to have his story, Ahsoka and Sabine to figure out what they need to do.
It's a good way to keep them apart until they need to be together. I don't think there's any question about that they'll all be together for this movie. It's Filoni's movie, so he wants to play with his characters, which is totally fair enough. You know, and he's had a really big part in The Mandalorian. You know, it's him and Favreau as well. So it's as much, you know, it's very much his characters in Mandalorian as well. And I'm not quite sure about how Skeleton Crew move into it, or Boba Fett, or whatever else, but you can sort of bet your bottom dollar that it's likely that the final stand of Thrawn will be in this movie. And he'll be, you know, going forward. I mean, I guess that's probably where we should probably have a look now. So when we basically left Ahsoka at the end, when it was all said and done, we've left Ahsoka, Sabine, and Baylan and Shin in the galaxy. Morgan's dead. She's out of the picture. Thrawn is back in the regular old Star Wars galaxy, and so is Ezra. So that's sort of where the pieces lie. So going, you know, the next series, I mean, do you think that, like, Thrawn will be a presence in Skeleton Crew? Do you think his name gets thrown around? Do you think the fact that he's back plays into it at all?
I think with Skeleton Crew, it's almost a chance to have a fresh start away from Mando, away from Ahsoka, all this stuff, and introduce brand new characters in the same sort of timeline, but not actually have it doesn't, or unless these kids accidentally intergalactic travel to and pick up Ahsoka and Sabine. I'm not sure, but it's definitely a
funny
chance.
Funny you should say that. We made a joke about that a few episodes back around Jude Law turning up in a space school bus and picking up Ahsoka and those guys. And I don't know if you've listened to the Sith List boys recently, but more learned people like King Tom, for example, is actually thinking about the same thing. Is there a way that when they get lost in this new galaxy, and maybe that's a way to bring it all together? Which,
it's interesting.
Doesn't sound credible from us, but it comes credible. It sounds a lot more credible from him.
Yeah, it's that weird thing because there is a definite disconnect. We haven't had, you know, previously, you know, Boba Fett, they drop Boba Fett in the Mandalorian thing. They do the soft pilot where he turns up, he gets his own show. Ahsoka, they do the same thing. They drop her in a couple of episodes, she gets her own show. This, you know, this Skeleton Crew one is completely, apart from that pirate, one pirate guy, who we only know that because, you know, Matt's telling us, he's got the inside word, but it's not like...
He's in the trailer.
I haven't seen the Skeleton Crew trailer. I haven't seen the shady, you know, which we'll probably...
Potato can.
Which we'll probably get in the next few weeks. If it's dropping in January,
yeah,
it will probably get that trailer, whether it's the same one that was at Celebration or it's a bit different. But, I mean, that's the thing. They've basically got an option to either get completely separated and just have its own little thing, or integrate. I feel like that they're not going to miss an opportunity to integrate, especially if they've got Jude Law and they can bring him in into a movie and stuff as well.
Am I going crazy, or is Jude Law's, did I read somewhere that Jude Law's character is force sensitive or is a Jedi?
I think you're right.
Possibly force sensitive.
Because I'm thinking to myself, God, we're filling that galaxy up now, aren't we?
With yeah.
A lot of Jedi that aren't around by raised it felt like
that last episode of Ahsoka when it was Ezra, Sabine, and Ahsoka all sort of throwing around lightsabers. It felt like a lot. Like, I was just like, this feels like a lot of swinging. Yeah. And Catherine, you can speak to this, that, you know, we went and saw Empire Strikes Back about 2 weeks ago with the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra. And Catherine and my sister came along and I took my daughter Olive. She saw Empire for the first time, loved it. A few scary bits, doesn't like the Wampa, but apart from that, pretty good. But that lightsaber fight, is so good. And there isn't anything technically great about it at all. And they're really barely just kind of whacking each other. But the tension and the fear and the everything around it is so heightened and just it's just magnificent. It's just and then you sort of cut to the Ahsoka stuff and they're all just sort of ribbing around and it just you don't feel I just don't feel the same. It doesn't feel the same.
Struthers said it was the worst choreography you've ever seen.
I wasn't even like I'm not a choreography guy. Like I never go, oh look that looks like that they're like I can never pick that up. It just sort of feel like it was just like a hacking through a lot of different dudes and stuff. And there wasn't sort of, the tension there. And it just felt like it was the fifth lightsaber fight of seven, you know, like it was the fifth of seven that we'd seen or whatever it is. But yeah, I don't know. Like you said, Andy, we're starting to populate this galaxy.
Yeah.
But maybe that's okay. Maybe it doesn't really matter.
We've got what 25 years left before the Force Awakens, or 20 years, or whatever it is.
Yep.
By which time the Jedi have turned into legends, have turned into myths.
Well,
and yet we're filling it up.
Well,
with people that conveniently weren't around during the OG.
Yeah.
I don't know, guys. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Luke's Academy does burn to the ground.
How do you write your way out of this?
A few years before.
Alex from Star Wars Explained had a good video on this just a day or two ago about how many Jedi survived Order 66. And he's talking about, you know, did 1% survive and out of the 10,000, how many is that? We've seen this many. And, he's also a little, for every Jedi we see survive Order 66, there has to be some explanation as to where they were during the original trilogy.
So you've got to basically backpedal as well. I mean, I saw something, I don't even know, maybe it would have been Pablo Hidalgo who was talking about it, was saying that, you know, like, and I think for the whole point of going, you know, because the whole thing was like, well, you know, only a fully tried, you know, Jedi with the forces ally can defeat the Emperor and blah blah blah. And it's like, well, if there's like 10 other dudes, that why does it have to be Luke? And it was a bit like, oh no, like Luke was the only one who could have done it because he had the relationship with Vader, and it's not like any other Jedi could have just walked in there and cut Palpatine down, apparently. In the timeline of those movies, it feels like it's very much just like Luke, you're on your own. Like you're the only dude here who can do this. And I know they have kind of carved that 3 years out where he's still technically the only person. But again, it falls into that Force Awakens, you know, when the Force does awake, Rey's the only one around as well, even though her backstory kind of sucks now. It's not quite as interesting as it was before. But anyway, we'll get to that when we get to that. Where do we go? Like, do we pick up Mando Season 3, Matt, and is it just the galaxy's on edge? Season four. This is the
Joshua.
Thing. I keep erasing season. I get corrected on season three as much as I tell you to talk into your microphone, I think. So every time I pull you up, you pull me up.
No, you've done this many times.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm not gonna edit. Mando season four. Is Thrawn a presence? Does Thrawn show up in right? Two questions. Double question, Matt, for you. Does Thrawn have a presence that is talked about in Mando season four, or does he even show up?
He will definitely show up.
Is he basically causing the trouble in that season, do you think?
It means they won't have to worry about that ridiculous pirate king seaweed monster dude.
They need a proper protagonist, don't they, really? I mean,
100%. Yeah. Like the pirate guy seemed very odd this season and played a role, but no, I think the landscape of the New Republic is shifting. The Empire is getting stronger. Will it merge into this, you know, the, what is it? The
First Order.
First Order, that's it.
Yep.
So, I mean, they're making movements towards the sequel trilogy and the tracks towards it. So, no, I'm looking forward to it.
It does make it harder again, though, because it's that thing of, that story is getting bigger and bigger, which does take away, again, from the core of Mando and Grogu. So you make it the story even bigger, then they become even smaller players, potentially, depending on the lens that you do it through, I guess. That's the whole thing. If it turns out that it's Mando versus, like, we can't, literally Mando versus Thrawn, and, like, Mando's on a Star Destroyer cutting through zombie witches or something like that. Like, I don't know. I'd like to just see that their day-to-day life is being affected by the galaxy being on edge. And then perhaps you do a bit of New Republic stuff in the background.
Mando season 4 needs to do something, and if the segue to it being interesting again is bringing Thrawn back in, I'm all for that, because they ran out of steam in season 3, in my humble opinion.
Well, you know what I think they should.
Awful lot to say.
I would be more than happy if Thrawn bombs Mandalore back to the Stone Age again. They get in there, nice. And it's just like, what happened? Oh, those Mandalores. Oh, yeah, no. Thrawn did when he got back is he finished the job on Mandalore. And he just, so they're all gone. Sorry, Axe Wolves and everybody else. Like, they're out of here. Like, Mando was on his farm or his little house. But let's get back to basics. Let's just rub all of that out. And then they can, you know, they can just, anything that annoyed me about the Mando season 3, I just want Thrawn to, in the next season, to just conveniently blow them up.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think we've seen a new side of Josh Chapman today. Yep. But
clear the decks for my
you're
amusement.
Entitled to your opinion.
Yeah, that's all I want to hear. What about you, Catherine? Do you, obviously Mando season 4 is coming, so we're going to have Skeleton Crew. Will Acolyte?
Yeah.
I'm assuming Acolyte comes out before Skeleton Crew. It's a separate timeline, so it's not really going to have any impact. I've already seen the trailer for that, so it'll be sometime next year.
Yeah. So Skeleton Crew, then, Acolyte, because that's actually being filmed.
Yep.
Mando season 4, I don't know if it's
they've started written. On yet. So then it'll probably be Andor.
I think he started writing it prior to the strike, and so now he'd be back writing it.
Yep.
Obviously, the actors are still on strike. So with Andor, that production, I'm not sure if it's back on. See, because it's in England, some of those actors aren't SAG. Some of them are.
Yep.
That's an odd one.
So they don't have
Diego
anything.
Diego would probably be SAG.
Yeah. So they don't. I mean, Acolyte and Andor have obviously no bearing on the story because they're different timelines. Skeleton Crew. It's interesting because if Skeleton Crew doesn't touch on it, it's going to be another 18 months before anything. There's any kind of follow up. Really, if we're not seeing Mando season 4 until another year and a half, maybe longer, maybe even end the year after, depending. When's it? Movie supposed to come out? Which movie?
2027.
Is that the Rey one though? That's not the Filoni. Was that
the first one's Rey?
And that's supposed to be 27.
The first one's Rey.
So that's still three years away.
Yeah. My opinion is that all of the TV shows that have been announced for the same sort of timeline are going to lead to the same thing.
Yep.
I can't see them starting up a television show within the same timeline. And them not having some crossover, they can't help themselves, really. I don't know Filoni's involvement. I think he's involved somewhat, but
how much can you get? Like, depending what Skeleton Crew does, we'll see whether that's a one-off, whether that's a thing. But Mando season 4, and then we get an Ahsoka season 2. I feel like we need those two seasons. Those two seasons will drop before a movie drops. Whether or not you get more than that, whether Ahsoka season 2, if it happens, it's likely to happen, will lead into the movie. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to speculate because it depends on what happens in these other shows. I'm assuming that when we get to season... I mean, they wouldn't Book of Boba Fett it and pick up Ahsoka in Mando season 4, like four episodes in, get them out of there, and then they're in and they all lead up. I mean, it depends. I guess if they don't do a second season of Ahsoka, they'd have to do it somewhere to get them out of there. But I'm assuming that when we start Ahsoka season 2, they're still on that planet.
Yeah.
I hope so, because, I mean, I keep talking about this and probably annoying the crap out of you guys, but there's so much to be told in this new galaxy that I really do hope, even if Ahsoka doesn't stay there and there's something else going on there. The story of Baylan and whatever happens there.
Yep.
Story of Shin, the story of, you know, there's so much richness there that I found more interesting than the main plot. I really do hope it does start there. And even if it's a spin-off, I don't really care. But the thing is, though, when it comes down to production and what's going on at the moment, don't forget that it seems to be that we're coming to the end of the actor's strike, which, you know, God willing, is going to be resolved very, very soon. But then in September, the VFX, the special effects guys started to unionize as well. So I have this horrible feeling that this is going to drag on. It's going to have a lot more impact than the immediate resolution of
real
the,
sets,
the
practical effects. Strike. All of a sudden, we're back to
especially if you consider that an awful lot, you know, whatever is already in the can and already that the production's finished and it's gone to post production, which typically is where all the special effects are done and the polishing is done. I don't want to be a naysayer, but I'm really worried that it's actually going to go on a lot longer than we think.
Well, the danger is that when you shoot with a volume, you need to have rendered backgrounds when you start, which are special effects. Yep. So you can't actually, in some cases, shoot things before if you're going to use a volume because you're not going to have anything to shoot in front of. So they might, you know. Anyway, we'll see how that goes on with that. But, I mean,
hopefully the studios learn something and come to the table quicker. But, I mean,
amen.
Apparently that, you know, the latest SAG negotiations weren't great.
Did you see that clip, the AI clip of the eight with the AI extras and the basketball thing?
that was horrendous.
Wasn't that hilarious? Yeah. Oh, man.
That was worse than Lizzo and Jack Black.
Maybe just. Thrawn will bomb that planet as well.
You're on one.
I'm on a tear tonight. So
Chapman's gone full chopper tonight.
Yeah, I have.
Not so, chopper Reed, chopper CP1.
So, where Ahsoka and Sabine are on this planet. What do you think Shin's up to, Mol? I would have actually have liked a moment. Like, what I actually would have liked at the end of that episode is, you know, when she pulls up on the dog and she sees all the bandits down the thing, she pulls the lightsaber up. I actually would have liked, and it doesn't make sense because where she was standing, if she'd had Morgan's sword rather than her lightsaber, because then you would have been like, oh, hello, she's going to go a little bit wackadoo here and she's going to, you know, I thought that actually was a missed opportunity. I mean, they've obviously got plans for her, but...
go full Ronin.
Yeah.
The full Ronin role, which was hinted on last week.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No. I just want to know, what do you reckon, Matt? You reckon her and Baylan meeting up again, or you reckon that's it? Baylan's on his own mission?
I think she's got the ability to sort of, you know, fall off the path, go down this Ravager lifestyle, and then reconnect with Baylan, who we actually got to think about. Who do we want to replace him?
Oh, it still feels too soon. Well, he's too crucial now to not replace. That was the thing. Like, I'd sort of, going in, I was a bit like, well, maybe he's a good protagonist. Someone has to eat it. He's probably a good one to eat it in the show. But he, like, especially the stuff that you were talking about, Andy, he feels so bigger picture now. Oh, I don't know whether, I think he might have even transcended as an Ahsoka protagonist. I think he's doing something completely different that may or may not
I don't think they're enemies. I mean,
Yeah,
he's not a bad guy. He's not a bad guy. He's on.
Well,
he's got a vision.
Murdered New Republic people, so that doesn't make him a good guy.
So yeah, I mean, the end game here is the end game for Filoni with Ahsoka is to basically have her become that replace the Lady Mortis. That
the
basically
daughter.
The Ahsoka will never daughter, really die.
Yeah. No,
she
no,
will.
No.
She will become. Because... All right, hit me up.
So. The possibility is Anakin is the father, Ahsoka is the sister, and they need Baylan to be the son.
But no, it's the father, the daughter, and the son. It's not the sister, it's the daughter.
So the father, so Ahsoka's the daughter.
Yeah, which is what I said.
Don't you have to be related?
Yeah.
Is it being related a prerequisite?
No, but like this is to maintain the force balance in this galaxy. Because so I went and watched the other Mortis arc straight afterwards. And it's so obvious in that cartoon that they definitely went to Peridea. They, you know, because even they go, I don't even know where we are. Like I don't even know if we're in this galaxy. Is they literally say that in the cartoon.
That's probably one of the 20 clips that you've sent me that I haven't watched on Instagram, probably.
Did you like the last one I sent you?
I don't think I've watched it. I'm sorry. I've watched some of them. But
sorry yeah. to interrupt, but the son was a dick. But he was absolutely evil.
Balin's he's meant not to evil. Be. I know
no,
that,
no,
but
I
mean,
Balin's not evil. Balin has a, I mean, typically with most people that we perceive as bad, as actually having a just reason for his quest to break it down and build up again. There is something else going on with Balin that I'd hate it if it was that binary.
So where do they stand now? Are they all gone, or is the father still around? Are they all? I have watched those episodes.
All dead.
They're all dead. So there's currently nobody in those spots.
Well, who knows? Like, but I mean, that's the thing. If the father keeps both of them in line, and they can't sort of leave the Mortis arc, because if they do, either one of them will be too powerful and will swing the balance of the force, the light side or dark side. And basically, so I'm thinking Anakin is the only one who can control both, light, dark. I don't know.
Do you think he's got a? Do you think Anakin's an interesting one, isn't it? Because he's. It's established. I mean, they had the flashback one. They're like, all right, and they've got the world between worlds, and it was all this like, well, it's him, but it's not really him. It's like a, you know, you get to show him, but it's not Anakin Skywalker. It's a memory. It's a representation. It's a blah blah blah. But then they literally show Anakin Skywalker, the ghost, as he is now at the end. So he is a thing that exists. He's still in play. And again, it's that like, well, does he turn up in Force Awakens? Is he gone by then? He's a voice at the end. So he is perhaps there. He does say that he brings balance. He literally, the only thing he says is like, Rey, bring balance like I did. Is that what he says? Something like, I know. I've only seen that That's movie a few times. So is it Filoni's endgame? Is it to basically account for where Anakin is for all eternity, where Ahsoka is for all eternity? And whoever else, whoever the third spot is, Balin, I don't know. Is he big enough cheese? Do you need a bigger cheese?
Well, Balin's looking for...
Does Balin put Shin in as a stool? And he basically goes, well, I don't want to do it, but I'll install you there as my dark side stooge for all eternity to sit, stand there and be angry. And therefore,
he's
now I've done it.
He's looking for some immeasurable power. So, you know, you think he's looking for... Yeah, a way to get to those three. And I can't remember where I heard it, but there was some theory out there that the first witch of Dathomir, or the first witch, or the person who became the witch, was actually the mother, because, you know, there's the father, the daughter, and the son.
Oh,
and the mother... You know,
that's the Abeloth theory.
Yes.
Abeloth theory. Oh, my God,
oh, that's the one that King Tom lost his mind over.
They said it would be amazing if they got Natalie Portman to be the mother, just so it would mess with Anakin so much.
And that's how you bring Portman back into it.
Ooh.
She's the only holdout. She's the only one who hasn't come back. Everyone else has come back except for Portman. I think she's literally the only top billing Star Wars actor who hasn't come back. Except for what, sorry, Matt?
Captain Panaka.
What about Captain Typho, Jay Lagala, Australia's own Jay Lagaya?
He was good.
Yeah.
Ryan Blessed hasn't come back. As far as I know, he's not, you know, he's
too busy being Grampy Rabbit. Not Grampy Rabbit. No, yeah, Grampy Rabbit. Oh, is he Grampy Rabbit or is he? Oh my God, I should know this.
I was just listening to Peppa Pig Pog.
Yeah, no, he is. He is Grampy Rabbit.
Yeah.
Because it's...
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't get me started on... We could U-turn very quickly here. I'm getting my wires crossed.
Someone should do a pod.
Someone, no, don't, because we're the only one around, so we're still number one. We don't need anybody more competent to come in. But if you do, you know what? If you're listening and you want to start a Peppa Pig podcast, that's great. But you got to start at episode one like we did. So we're 160 episodes ahead of you. Just if you think you can catch us, you can catch us.
And if it's within his power, Chapman will get
Thrawn to bomb the competition. Yeah, exactly.
So it never happens.
Exactly.
So it never happens.
So is Sabine, are we going to get a Jedi? Sabine's on the path now. We've established she's finally realized her potential.
She had forced constipation.
She's had her Oslamax, and she's cleared the decks, and now she can feel the force. And she's going to have a lot of time on her hands. as well. So
to train.
Yeah. So are we going to get a? You know, I'm all for her, you know, getting more power. I just think she needs to work on her attitude. I think she's still acting like a 17-year-old, petulant 17-year-old. Making some-
yeah.
Yeah,
she was painful. I'm sorry.
To someone who really deals with a lot of 17-year-olds.
Story, but oh, she was so painful.
I feel as if my personal opinion, and I think I said this to Hawes a few weeks back, was that my personal opinion had they had a plan, bearing in mind it's all the same creators that are creating this. This culmination, which will be an Avengers moment. It was such a shame they destroyed the Darksaber in Mando Series 3. Now, I understand that was a plot point or a metaphor for the importance of what it was, and it wasn't as important as the individual. Mm-hmm. I get that. But what would have been really, really awesome would have created more of that tissue, which would have connected series together. Would have been if in this season, Sabine discovers her force powers, and in doing so, as part of her journey going forward and maturing, she ended up being the one to wield the Darksaber. So we finally have a Mandalorian Jedi.
Which they even kind of hint on, don't they, at the start? It's like, well,
yeah,
it's
exactly. Yeah, and it was kind of like it's down to planning again. And it's,
I think there was a lot of, and
I
had
think it's
this,
a missed opportunity.
I had a lot of problems with this. The biggest problems I had with this season or this series was that there was a lot of assumption that you should know about why people are acting the way that they are and why they're doing what they're doing. Yeah. And I guess that we know some of this stuff because we know a lot about Star Wars, but for other people, and you know, obviously I think the Anakin thing was the biggest thing that burden that Ahsoka felt was really just was barely even implied, let alone shown. It was really
like
we're kind of
being told to me through stuff rather than me finding it out while watching the television show.
Yeah, it feels like it's like, well, and you kind of go, okay, well, I guess she probably does because, you know, but it's not really mentioned. She even sort of, you know, she speaks to Luke about, yep, you're just like your father. You're just like your father, not just like.
So much like your father.
Yeah, but she's just like, thinking about the good times rather than being like, you know, what your father was and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like this because I'm carrying this burden and then I'm freed of this burden and I'm like this. It was more, my character feels off from what I recall. I go through this thing. I seemingly have come through the other side and I'm somewhat in a better mood. I'm going to laugh and smile a little bit more, but not right, really. I don't know.
But it's a really difficult balance, isn't it? Because we're talking about folk having to know the background of the characters in order to really appreciate the story. And yet I found the first two episodes, which were really exclusively focused on building backgrounds, quite boring. Quite. So it's that kind of balance. It's how do you bring new people into the story without it being overkill for the folk that already know the story and it just being kind of like a recap on what's come before? It must be a really, really tough exercise.
But they even took time to be like, you know, you used to train Sabine. You're not talking anymore. There's some beef. There's a problem.
Yeah.
And you could have just gone, my master turned into this thing because the dark side. I know they kind of went at the end and it was even like someone else who said it was just like, well, she, you know, she was worried that, you know, because of what happened to Mandalore, she'd get angry. Like you could have really played up those moments. It doesn't need to be addressed in the last episode as a line. Like it could have actually been a real bugbear through the whole thing. And then you could have tied Anakin's presence into it even more. So then when she does get to have that cathartic release from Anakin, it's more significant. It just sort of like, you still got they still had like all the beef, but there was no real, we didn't really know why. They were just being kind of dicks to each other.
And on that point of a cathartic release from Anakin, and I did mention it a little bit last week, and I kind of was going to wait until my kind of summary at the end as to what I thought. I really struggled with Ahsoka as a character all the way through this. I thought, you know, Rosario Dawson's a great actress. She did all, but this, I really thought that she was quite, do you understand the word Mardy? She was quite.
Yeah, like a Mardy bomb.
Yeah. She's really angry or really, really sulky in the first couple of episodes. And I thought that that transition, when she obviously went to the World Between Worlds, and then we saw her have that enlightenment with herself and how she felt about her master, I really thought that we started seeing at the end of that episode, you know, she's smiling. There's a little brevity, sorry, the little bit of jovialness coming from her. And then she went back into it again, into this stoic
only
character.
Only for half an
modern
episode.
Mate, I really struggled. Yeah. I really, really struggled.
But
with,
what was her?
I really thought.
Sorry, I was just going to ask you. You might be able to. So at the very start of it, she's looking for this map, right? Is her motivation to get the map to find Ezra, or is that a byproduct, or is it to stop Thrawn? It's more about Thrawn, isn't it? She's got wind that
there's
a way to Thrawn. But Ezra is the bait to get Sabine
Thrawn
involved, isn't it?
Stopping Thrawn is more important than finding Ezra, but it's a byproduct of the shared interest.
Yep. And okay.
And then she can't figure out the map, and so she has to go with Sabine, who's then motivated, and then they have to put their beef aside.
Yeah. Even Thrawn isn't particularly played up as the menace that he is, probably more so for the layperson as well. Like, obviously, Matt, you're just like, oh my God, Admiral Thrawn, he's the world's greatest strategist, and blah, blah,
there's
blah.
There's a difference between Timothy Zahn writing Thrawn and Dave Filoni writing Thrawn.
Yeah.
But yes, it's definitely for the layperson.
It would have, I think we got an insight into Thrawn's strategic ability, you know, plans upon plans. But of course, we come to this with the Heir to the Empire trilogy, the new canon trilogies. We come with that backstory of knowing who Thrawn is and the strategic threat he is, because I have heard on other podcasts of not of people so into Star Wars of going, oh, you know, he's such a threat to Luke Skywalker, and it's like, actually, they're not really interested in each other, you know, they're not threats to each other on the same
not peers
level.
Are
like,
they really
not yet
no. Well, the thing is, Thrawn is a threat on the New Republic because of his strategic ability. He's a threat in that sense, but he and Luke aren't going to get on into a one-on-one fight. Luke does not have the strategic ability of Thrawn.
No.
We all know this.
He barely put a plan
together. We love Luke, but
so how does Thrawn do it, Mol? So Thrawn's back now.
Well,
what's his game here? Is it just to take over the remnants and run through, or what's his goal here?
Well, I mean, there's all this talk, obviously, because, you know, Thrawn, you know, when he finds out that Ahsoka is Anakin Skywalker's apprentice, and, you know, all the joke is like, when Thrawn gets back to the main galaxy and realizes who's the cause of the fall of the Empire, oh, great, it's Anakin Skywalker's son.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it gives a lot of ground, but you know, they're saying that there's only Luke Skywalker is the only person capable of taking down Thrawn, not in a strategic sense, but, you know, he's the guy who can get in the X-Wing and blow the thermal exhaust port.
The Force is the thing he can't really plan for. I think that's what he does. Like, he's wary of Force users because I can't really plan for it. They're working in an they're not working in a logic that I can control to a point. I mean, they kind of use that in the book
with the lizard
things. Yeah, but they haven't brought
that'd
in
awesome.
Yet.
That'd be awesome.
But, yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, do you need to spend a season of Mando at him being the protagonist and seeing him really mess with people? Like, I think you need to build him up over and make him, you know, so when we get to this movie, it's not just like, oh, Thrawn's back and he's cooking some stuff. Like, I think he needs to be messing
Mando
with people the whole
seem
time.
Like a,
no, but that's
Mando
what I mean.
Like,
I don't
like
know
a
whether it's
a threat, though, does it? It's all very provincial. It's all kind of
a
little bit small.
But Mandalore does, and they obviously tap into the New Republic as well. So that's the question about that season is, like, are Mando and Grogu again sort of slight bystanders in this larger story? Or does it come to a personal story and it's just like things happening around them that it's affecting? Well,
I mean, Ahsoka season two could very possibly be 100% just Shin, Baylan, Ahsoka, and Sabine on the separate galaxy with no necessary need to go into the other galaxy and just focus solely on that. Ezra and Thrawn can now be players in Boba Fett, Mando, Skeleton Crew, and play minor roles in those three storylines and progress the story. Ahsoka can finish her story with Anakin. I mean, Anakin's, you know, can we just take a moment to appreciate Hayden Christensen, who you denied me, Josh? I'm very, very pissed off.
Saved
about
you
now.
From an extremely uncomfortable
moment.
The
chosen one needed to meet me. He has been phenomenal.
Continue kicking over the poor kid in the wheelchair that he was with. So
I would have pushed him
to the
side. Funnily enough, you know, I actually bumped into him and kept walking Hayden, and you, I didn't even realize.
I locked eyes with Hayden. We had a moment. He looked at me with his big.
Josh gave him a thumbs up. I did give him a thumbs up. Apologize for me bumping into him.
No, I just went, "G'day," and he went, "All right." And that was it. And that was enough interaction as a man who was not there.
As you needed. You deprived me. Anyway, Hayden's been amazing. Obi-Wan was fantastic what he did. This was just...
I'm all for the renaissance, and he deserves to have everything that he's gotten. And, you know, he's a guy who had to eat a lot of shit for a long time.
He did.
And, you know, he's
Ibn Ahmed.
Yeah, no, and he's come back in a big bad way, and he's been really good, and it's great. Yep.
And I think I said it last week as well. His appearances serve the story, which is the main thing. They serve the story. It could have been, again, baked in cheese, but it wasn't. It was done really well.
I can't believe we'll go as long as we need to go. I'm looking at the time, going, oh my god, you know. But obviously, we don't want to be up too late because it's the evening here and people have got places to do. But is this Filoni movie actually a detriment to what's going on now? Because that's all we can think about as the end game, and going, well, we assume that this person will be here, this person will be here, this has got to happen, this has got to happen. Like, it would be better to not know there was a movie and just play this thing out in TV without worrying about how all these pieces fit into this thing.
Yes and no. I think the yes part is, it means that everyone's like, well, I'm going to watch this because it's going to lead into a movie. I'm not going to skip one. That's sort of the cynical Disney wanting many eyes on things.
Yep.
So in that, not a detriment. Now, I've forgotten my train of thought.
Good but bad, but bad but also good.
Yep.
But I think the scale, like, obviously, the idea that we get to finish this, or, you know, and get to have this culminate on something of a scale that's got movie money is pretty exciting. Yeah. That you get to go to a cinema and for 2.5 hours or 2 hours or whatever it's going to be, it's going to be this huge scale $200 million Star Wars movie with all the bells and whistles where obviously everything's going down.
Well, we thought, you know, for how many years, how many movies did we know that there would end up being a big Avengers team up against Thanos?
Yeah.
We knew that for a very long time. And
it was awesome.
Yep. You know,
yeah.
Portals, all great.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's also reassuring to actually know there's a plan, you know?
It's definitely nice to have a plan.
One of the things that you could, you know, I think all of us would agree on is that, you know, we all remember JJ coming out and saying, well, actually, probably would have been better if we had a plan from the get-go on where this story is taking us.
And
these guys have got a plan, might not agree with it. I think they've missed some opportunities. I think they, you know, I said last week that, sorry, I said this week about the Darksaber, and I said last week about the missed opportunity of making more out of the cloning story that we were chasing in Mando. But, you know, they've got a plan, and I'm hope the culmination of all of this makes it really interesting. And then you end up with a movie with some pretty big names leading it as well. If the likes of Jude Law and the rest are going to be in that, it's going to be good.
Yeah, because that idea of having a plan, because I think no matter your thoughts on the sequel trilogy, everyone comes away going, I wish that they had planned better, that there had been a plan from the start. Yes, the directors can do little changes, but that there was a plan from the start. And
which is kind of crazy, really, isn't it? Like when you think of it, like I know they were so desperate to bring Star Wars back and all that sort of stuff, and so much hit, and it was hard, you know, on short notice to get people to commit to long-term stories and stuff. But it, like, I feel like I'm taking a deep.
Actors were getting older. I mean, look, Carrie Fisher died.
Yeah, but like they had Lawrence Kasdan, like the man who wrote Empire Strikes Back, literally co-wrote Force Awakens. Like he could have just gone, all right, Larry, now you can write the outlines for the next two. Like, I love The Last Jedi. I think it's great. I think Ryan did an amazing job. But, you know, the next one just undid all that. I can't. Yeah, we'll go down a rabbit hole if we go down that sort of thing. No. But,
they should have just let Ryan do all three.
Well, we'll see. You know, and one day maybe we'll get to see, hopefully see his trilogy play out. But, like, I know we're running at 55 minutes here, but let's go around the room here. Catherine, how did you feel overall? I mean, it's always good to get new Star Wars. We're spoiled for Star Wars, really, when we think about for years we only had a few movies and now we get TV series and we get all this stuff. Like, are we asking too much? Are we holding it too high a standard?
Yeah, as someone who grew up with just three movies on a Beta and then, you know, a VHS, you know, it's unbelievable that I go, oh, yeah, I don't like this Star Wars. I like that Star Wars. It sounds very, very fussy. But, you know, I always try to focus on the positive when talking about it each week. As Ezra, I thought Ezra was great. We haven't mentioned Ezra. I thought the actor who played Ezra was
great. It was funny. A friend of mine really made a point just going like, what is up with that guy? Like, I think he's terrible. I'm like, if you'd watch the cartoons, you'll know he's exactly like that. Like it's actually a perfect representation of what that actor is doing off that character. He's like, oh, okay, I just thought he was a bit sort of, I don't know, he said jovial. Like his tone was just sort of slightly different for Star Wars, I suppose. Like, no, that's just like a kind of a great approximation of what the cartoon character was like.
Yeah, but also I thought, you know, he was the character from the TV show, but having grown up a few years. So I thought it was really good. I mean, the only thing that sort of threw me a little bit was how contacty blue his eyes were. You know, you could go, oh, yeah, they're contacts. You know, like I know his eyes were blue in the cartoon, so they had to match
but
it.
But they weren't like
that was a
but everyone's eyes are just their eyes. They're just that blue because it's a cartoon because you just paint them blue. I didn't think he was like, oh, my God, he's got, like, a crazily blue eyes that are so much more bluer than blue has ever been. I don't think that carried in the cartoon. Maybe I'll have to go back and rewatch.
Yeah.
They're blue.
On Ahsoka, they looked very blue.
They did.
They're very blue in the cartoon, too, trust me.
Yeah.
Matt's been doing the rewatch.
But I enjoyed that. I really liked Baylan. And Shin, I really liked where Baylan's story is going, and I wish they had used him more. And I have heard somewhere suggested Gerard Butler. Don't know where I heard that. I don't know where if you could get him, but I don't know.
Oh, they are quite blue, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, Jerry Butler would be. We could get. I think it's
the people's choice is Liev Schreiber.
Okay.
Yeah,
I could see that. I think you're going to say that Liam Neeson for a second. I'm like, that would be confusing. I'd seen Sean Bean as well, which I don't mind.
It depends on where the story goes.
But also,
could pick. He's on his own. He's walking the earth. He's on his own journey now. You could pick up with him in 5-10 years' time. Big hair, massive beard, unrecognizable. Doesn't matter.
They could write around it. They could literally have him get there and use some old footage and have it explode in his face and the mountain blows up. You know what I mean? Like, he could get
he's too good a character now. He's been a breath of fresh air.
It's not only his character, it's his story. It's where he's...
There aren't a lot of Star Wars recastings, are there, from movie to movie? I mean, I know Solo, that was like the younger Solo, but...
Wedge?
Was Wedge a recasting?
Well, yeah, technically there's
from
like
one scene to another.
Yeah. But not from the film to the next.
From A New Hope, it's a different wedge. And then it's Empire.
No. All bets are off now, though. Mon Mothma. I mean, all bets are off now. She's transitioned.
Yeah, she's
that
crossed
time
that
scale
Return of the Jedi line. Yeah.
To sequel. Exactly. So, so come on, let's just be sensible about it. And let's not spend a lot of money on AI and animatronics and the rest of it. Let's just get a new cast member out there. Much as I loved Ray's performance, I think to his memory, it deserves a recast rather than some CG.
Yeah, it's in some ways more respectful than CG. Yeah.
Well, I honestly couldn't tell you what they would do. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, nothing would surprise me, whether it was a puppet, whether it was old footage, whether it was CG, whether it was face swapped, whether it was whatever.
Recast is the easiest.
Oh, I know. That doesn't mean that, I know, but that doesn't mean at all that that's what they will do. Like, we'll just get some featurette of the slate flying, like, yeah, so we got the Ray Stevenson 10,000 here, and we put his face on, and anyway, like, anything could happen. All right, Andy, how'd you feel about the whole thing? I know you said you had some notes, but you have touched on a few things.
I prepared for this.
Oh, right. All right.
Prepared for this.
We've got a Kevin Garbutt's clock starting now.
Yeah, I know. He's right. So it's actually positives and negatives. So the first thing is the aesthetics of the show I thought were world class, absolutely world class. And yet one of the negatives I've got is the aesthetics of the show, which were somewhat subpar. So what I love the world building, the ships, the conflict, some of those amazing moments with Thrawn with two TIE fighters taking out from the landing bay either side of his head. At the same time, some of the makeup, some of the alien makeup for Hera in particular. I think about Guardians of the Galaxy and just how much the studios have got that kind of makeup to such a degree that it looks genuine. And I thought that some of the aesthetics with Hera and other aliens, including Thrawn at the very, very beginning, looked a little bit pantomimey, a little bit cosplay.
Hera was in a lot of well-lit rooms as well, which didn't help her. She was in a lot
of... It was things like the severity of her eye makeup, for example, the severity of her lips, whereas, you look at someone like Gamora in Guardians, and it's a lot more natural. It's a lot more time's gone into that kind of makeup. But that's one thing. Second thing was the acting. The acting, I thought, on one side was amazing. I look at Balin, I look at Chin, I look at Thrawn. I look at the impact they made in the story and the fact that they were feeding the story rather than it being an individual narrative that served themselves as a character. I thought it was amazing. At the same time, I also had a problem with the acting in that I was somewhat conflicted on Rosario with, as I said before, with Ahsoka. I thought that I was getting to know her as an individual through her own subplot of her personal story and a transition, but then she kind of went back to the sulky Susan approach the end, which I thought we'd got over. I thought we kind of it was that arrogance and that kind of, which isn't, and I know that
I want my Star Wars.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the compassion and the empathy that is Ahsoka as a character. I didn't necessarily see, apart from one or two glimpses, which I thought were her transitioning to where she was at that moment in time.
Matt, you can probably answer this. Sorry, Andy, we'll come back to you, let you wrap up. But
right.
You've gone back, you've been doing some Rebels stuff, obviously, living the dream. How does Ahsoka in Rebels compare? Because everyone compares Ahsoka to Clone Wars Ahsoka. But obviously she comes back in Rebels and she's been through all the Order 66 stuff. She's been through all the Anakin stuff.
No, but she's still highly conflicted by it. Like,
but is she closer to the Rosario portrayal? Like, is Rosario portraying? I mean, she really should be portraying that character rather than Clone Wars character.
Well, no, I think because the whole training Sabine was big for her because obviously her training wasn't complete, and then with Sabine's family being wiped out and sort of the anger and fear inside her has obviously completely freaked her out to the point where she's ditched her completely, just abandoned her. And that's why they've got bad blood.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Okay. I'm just sort of going, all right, I'm just trying to remember what... I have watched Rebels, but I haven't got... I'm just trying to remember what her character was like in that. Was she more, you know, closer to the Rosario portrayal? But Andy, let you wrap up, mate.
Yeah, and the last was story, and in particular the subplot. So I thought the subplot with Baylan was just phenomenal. I still think, to this day, that I still think there is something, if they do it right, I think there is something amazingly interesting about what the future for Star Wars could be if they just don't kind of tie that up badly to serve the plot in the galaxy that we know and love. I think there's an amazing opportunity to expand to all it, to be in a place where which everyone's looking for at the moment, which is something new.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Baylan's the key to that. And whether we see him in even in the Avengers moment, I don't mind, as long as, you know, 20, 30 years later in the timeline, something magnificent comes from all of this to put the galaxy in peril again.
Yeah.
As far as, and sorry, I know I've gone on a little bit, but as far as if you look at seasons, this is my third favorite season of all the TV Star Wars we've had.
Okay.
Number one is Andor, simply because it's an amazing piece of drama and just so happens to be in the Star Wars universe. It's that simple. Number two is Mando series one, because it was groundbreaking at the time and brought us into this environment at the moment where we're actually complaining and nitpicking about the abundance of Star Wars we've got. And without that, we wouldn't be where we are now.
Yep.
And so, and with number three, it's Ahsoka. And I do feel that the story was strong enough that the characters contributed to the delivery of the story, not the other way around, which I, unfortunately, repeating myself, I felt that it was not the case with some other series that we've had where the story was kind of written around a little bit of fan service for a character that we all love and enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Matthew, now, you're a man who got a lot of things you wanted, probably more so than any. I mean, we all got things that we like, but I think when we started this, you had a laundry list of things that you wanted, and I think for the most part, you got most of that. So how does it...
Bucket list ticked off. Drawn jacket purchased.
So does that just leave you completely satisfied, ready for more, or what do you, like...
I'm highly appreciative. I mean, you know, me and Jimmy, we always wanted this to happen more than anything and never thought it actually would. So for it to be, you know, ever-present and... You know, Thrawn is now the main focus of this, whatever we're about to get for the next, 3 to 5 years. It's pretty exciting. I actually, you know, that episode 4, 5, and 6, where, you know, they ended with Anakin. We had that incredible Filoni episode. And then I know you didn't like it, Josh, because it didn't make the story thicken enough for you. And then, you know, you had the Ezra and Thrawn comebacks. Like those. Three episodes in terms of nostalgic, buzzing, hyperactive Star Wars serotonin releases. That for someone like me, that was just like it was an immense festival of Star Wars. And you know, for that, I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, the finish was okay; it was pretty good. But where we're going is what's really exciting for me. And you know, all we have to do is wait and survive, basically. Eat healthy.
Yeah.
Keep walking.
Yeah, that's right.
Get your 10,000 steps, because yeah. I don't want to miss any of it.
Absolutely.
You don't want to go on your deathbed and go, did I watch enough Star Wars? Yes, I did.
yeah, look, I'm happy people are happy, absolutely. And I'm not unhappy at all. I don't know whether I'd probably put it, Andor sits above all for me, obviously. I think Mando season one, I probably put Obi-Wan after that, Mando season two, Boba Fett. I put Ahsoka after probably season two of Mando. But it all depends. I'd have to go back and rewatch things. And, you know, I think a lot of it was done really well. I think there were moments to amp up tension, to amp up relationships, to amp up plot motivations more, probably that a little bit of dialogue here and there, and it wasn't like we were stuck for time. You probably could have put a few more nuggets of dialogue in certain places to amp stuff up, to make the stakes a little bit more interesting or clearer, or especially to the layperson, Star Wars, lives and dies on lay people as well. You know, there's a core number of fans who will turn up all the time, and that's us. But if the general public don't fly for it, this stuff doesn't get across the line. You know, you're talking about the 1.2 million, those 400 that dropped off, that's none of us. We'd stick with it to the end. They've got to keep those people in. They've got to make sure that they are engaged and they know what's going on. They understand what's going on and they're crucial. So, you know, and that was the thing. Like, there was, just touching on Andor, there was never a moment that you didn't feel the motivations and the tensions and the reasons why people did things and how they were feeling and why they were in these predicaments and why it mattered and why the things mattered. And, you know, I think Ahsoka could have amped those up. And, you know, Mando was guilty of that as well. And whether it's just, the writers just aren't as good, a few more passes on the script, who knows? But there's definitely plenty of meat on the bone that we can all feast on for a while. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm more sad that we don't get to catch up and do this every week. It's been, you know, I never really sort of originally set out to do recaps. We didn't do recaps for the first season of Mando. And we didn't do them for Obi. Did we do them for Obi-Wan? No, because it fell over Celebration as well. So it's still a reasonably recent thing, but people seem to like it, and it's good having you guys come in. And we brought Andy in this year, which has been a bonus. As a man who wouldn't even get on the microphone in front of a microphone for Celebration 6-7 months ago.
You guys have been cool.
It'll be different.
You guys have been cool.
And I have had messages also about how good you've been, Andy, as well. So... not to embarrass you on air, but
I'm just glad that you guys have been patient with me, because I find it very hard to actually string a sentence together most days. So the fact that you've been very patient with me on this, and I mean, because I consider you three guys, you know, the utmost of professionals when it comes down to this stuff. As I'm watching,
well, this is the
as
thing,
I'm watching like, Matt as, texting on his phone.
Yeah, I'm getting my words. Are you coming up soon?
Yeah. Well, this is the thing is that very quickly, you know, Andy started. You know, Andy came to us as a fan of not just this podcast, but a lot of our adjacent podcasts and things. And he was someone that we met and were happy to have hang around with us and things like that. But he has very quickly seen how the sausage is made and how unglamorous and unprofessional it is. It's just, you know, there is...
Did I just get called a sausage?
Yeah.
So or am I the mince?
Yeah, you're the mince. All that weird casing that goes around the
gelatin casing.
But... no, it's been awesome, and I really appreciate everybody who's come on. Turbo, we were trying to get on. He couldn't make it tonight, but...
loser.
We'll still do episodes of the podcast when I can, just back on the guest format as normal, but when we get the date for Skeleton Crew, these are the people I want here to pick it up again. Hopefully we can run with it as we were before. But we'll wrap it up here. Everyone's got to go up to their wives.
I'll propose something with you.
Yes, mate.
Why don't we do a...
What is he proposing?
Star Wars movie rewatch from 1 to 9. There's been eight. When was the last time you watched the movie?
Oh, and recap. Well, maybe like once a month or something, we'll reconvene and we'll go over a movie or something. How's that sound? Do you want to do the movies?
We're not starting with Rogue One, Catherine. You have to wait at least five movies to get there.
Let's if people want to do that, yeah, all right.
Let's do it.
All right, we'll bring the team in. That's a good thing to do to keep in touch while we wait for the TV.
And we'll call it Mole Star Wars Review. No, definitely not.
You could do that on your own podcast, Matt. It's just I have to organize everything.
I couldn't get one episode out of this entire. So, Callan, Dylan, Turbo, you all suck. But anyway, I'm happy. I'm here. I've got what I need.
Well, that's good. And you don't have to record it. You don't have to edit it. You don't have to book everybody. God, that's my favorite thing, just for people who are listening, is guesting on podcasts, because I can just turn up and talk and leave, and I don't have to do everything else. It's a beautiful thing.
Josh, do you remember how excited I was on your first guest on my podcast that I made you a crawl?
Oh, yeah. That's when you thought that I was someone of podcasting significance. It was like,
and Josh is like, I do believe they think I'm some sort of god.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, no, it's not that special at all. Once you've sort of shared a house with me, it's like, oh, yeah, I've just seen this guy walk around in his boxer shorts. It's actually not that glamorous. Awesome. Thank you, guys. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll wrap it up here. But, yeah, I think that's a great idea. We'll reconvene in a month. We'll work out what movie we do, what order, all that kind of stuff.
Phantom Menace.
Whether we go to one or whether we do them in release order or whatever we do, we'll work it out. Probably Phantom Menace. But thank you, Catherine, for always turning up and being, you know, the reliable
100% attendance.
100% perfect attendance. Thank you.
I'm happy with 7 out of 8.
Do I get a certificate?
Yeah, you get a letter from the Queen. thank you, Kath. Thank you, Andy. We obviously just already talked about how great it's having you join the crew. And Matt, you know, it's not the same when you're not here. It's your microphone technique is slowly getting better as well.
It's organized.
It is. It's good. But thank you, everybody.
Listen, you just got a mic stand 20 minutes ago and you're giving me mic lessons.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So thanks, everybody. And we'll see you soon. Bye for now.
Bye.
Oh, and congratulations to Boo and Brittany.
Woo!
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.